It's music from Kim Hill along with Selah and All My Tears Be Washed Away, song written by Julie Miller, I believe, who is Buddy Miller. They make some wonderful music together, too. But All My Tears, Kim Hill and Selah. Before that, Lenny LeBlanc and The Rain, and we're off and running into our 8 o'clock hour on a Tuesday morning here, September the 4th on Broken Road Radio. I'm Jim Park, and Dave Donald Punt is here. And now we're joined by the Reverend Dr. John Delancey from Glenshaw, Pennsylvania. John is pastor and our resident expert in archaeology. So, John, welcome to the program this morning.
Good morning, guys. It's good to be with you.
Good morning, John.
John is suffering from a cough today, so we'll be very patient if that happens. But we have lots of interesting things to talk about today, all centered around the very ancient town of Jericho. And in brushing up for our conversation, John, I didn't realize that there were people in Jericho that long ago. Now, if you're a young earther, this will ruffle your feathers a little bit, but archaeologists have claimed civilizations dating back almost 13,000 years to 10 to 11,000 B.C. in that area. And I guess those would have been hunter-gatherer types, wouldn't they, John?
Yeah, they would have been. Those who, like myself, hold to a young earth position, they use the archaeological terms of Chalcolithic and Neolithic, which of course goes back to those dates that you suggested. But indeed, we do have evidence of a very old tower. You can still see it today. It's a round tower, and it certainly predates the Canaanites, but how far back it goes, I guess that's open to speculation.
Well, there's not that we doubt that there were civilizations of that nature. It's just a matter of when and actually dating it. And how are dates like that settled? Now, would that have been involved carbon dating, or is that a matter of looking at the layers, how deep in the ground it is, and adjacent layers, and finding what they find next door to it? Is that how they date that?
Well, primarily it is its position, or situ. A lot of times pottery can also be used to distinguish one time period from the next. This particular tower, for instance, I think more of its location, and I'm not sure if carbon dating was assessed on it, but indeed it seems to be that this tower does predate the Canaanites, which, of course, the early Canaanite period or the early Bronze period starts in 3100 BC. So we're talking about 5100 years ago. And indeed, this tower probably does date a little prior to that. I'm not sure if it's thousands of years prior to this early Canaanite date, but nonetheless, it's quite impressive.
What about Jericho itself? What makes it so attractive as a place to live? Because apparently succeeding eras of settlers, people of various tribes and kinds have been there. What is it? Tell us about the geographical setting of Jericho.
Well, we know that, for instance, guys like Herod the Great had a couple palaces, and he had one actually in Jericho, and that's because, just like you Minnesota people who end up snowbirds in Florida or Arizona, the climate in Jericho, located right there in the Rift Valley in the Dead Sea or Jordan River Valley, is about 1,200 feet below sea level. So whereas Jerusalem gets maybe as much rain in a couple months as London, and cold and, you know, yucky, literally 20 miles to the east in the Dead Sea Basin, you might get maybe a day or two of rain a year, and it's very mild and very comfortable, especially in the winter months. Of course, in the summer, it's very, very hot and dry. But
okay, it had a reputation as the City of Palms. That was its signature, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. And so agriculture can take place all year round. It's really a nice area. You know, in terms of climate, there's really no difficulties other than, you know, in the summer, the lack of rain. But they managed to live there. And I think that's one reason Jericho was really a centerpiece city here in this area. It served as a strategic place as well. And that comes into play when we talk about the Joshua story and crossing the Jordan Valley in the Jordan River, specifically here, just across from Jericho.
Now, of course, Jericho is prominent in both the Old and the New Testaments, and I'm thinking it's probably, aside from Jerusalem, the most significant archaeological site in Israel. Would you agree?
Well, it's one of the most significant. It's certainly not the largest. Hatzor up north, sort of related to the city, because both Hatzor and Jericho, we end up talking about the evidence, archaeologically speaking, that relates to the conquest of Joshua. So for that historical reason, yes, indeed, it is significant. But the question is, when we look at the years and years of excavation from the Germans in the early 1900s to the British to even the Italian team a few times during the course of the last number of decades, we have interesting conversation that goes around and around relating to what was found and what date do you assess it to, and how does that relate to the story of Joshua?
Of course, Jericho has been a center of interest for professionals and amateurs for centuries, but I guess the real archaeological research didn't start until the 19th century, the 1800s, and the Germans were all over that, all over the Holy Land in those days with various digs. Was that archaeology harmful or helpful?
I think it was...
I know they did some damage to sites because the whatever science there is in archaeology wasn't real well advanced at the time and not always proper care taken.
Well, the issue with archaeology is if you dig down, of course, anything that lies on the surface you're going to have to destroy in order to get down to lower levels. So in some regard, the early archaeologists, approaching archaeologists and archaeology in a more primitive way, seem to destroy more than what they actually found or published. So obviously when you go down through a level, you destroy it for good. So documents and reporting and those kinds of disciplines, I don't think were as intact as it is today with the approach of modern-day archaeologists.
Of course, even record-keeping in the 1800s would have been much tougher. I mean, it would write everything by hand. Mm-hmm. Even typewriters were new, so keeping accurate records of what you saw, where it was, and drawings of the dig and so forth would have been a lot more challenging than they are these days with modern technology. Now, if we fast forward to the 1950s, there was a British archaeologist by the name of Kathleen Kenyon who claimed to have found the mud bricks that had been the walls of Jericho during Joshua's time and the Israelite assault on the city. Valid findings, or what do you think?
Well, Kenyon would actually agree that she did find remnants of a wall, both parts of a wall, a revetment wall, which was the stone wall that you can still see today. It was sort of like the foundational bottom level wall, a little more fortified. It was made of stone, but on top of this wall was a mud brick wall, and indeed she will not... refuse in saying that she found remnants of this mud brick wall. The part of the wall, I think, actually came tumbling down in the Joshua 6 story. But the difficulty lies in how she dates that wall. She concluded, erroneously in my opinion, humbly, not that I'm the expert, but from all the data that I can read, she unfortunately dates it to a time when the Bible tells us that Joshua was still not here conquering the land. She dates the wall to the 16th century, or about 1550. And while she does not deny that there was a wall that was destroyed, she does not actually, did not, I should say, attribute that to Joshua. Because of this, she then concluded that perhaps Joshua did not enter the land until a couple of centuries later. That's how we conclude the two varying dates that are attributed to the conquest of Joshua. If indeed it happened, well, the conservative date would be a 1400 mm-hmm. approximately date, and Catherine Kenyon would then put the conquest much later, 200 years specifically, to the 13th century or the 1200s BC.
You know, it seems to me that dating archaeological finds to within 10 years is kind of asking too much of the system. I mean, that's got to be a long leap, doesn't it?
Unless 10 years, but certainly 200 years.
Well, if she was saying 1550,
she does.
Destruction. Yeah. I mean, that's an amazing calculation. Even in the 1950s, the technology was not that advanced. You know, carbon dating and the like. So that could be a tenuous conclusion right there. She did also find evidence of the burning of the town. And if we think back to the story, and Joshua and the Israelites were told by God to encircle the town, to march around it once a day, being led by the Ark of the Covenant and the priest with the shofars, with the ram's horn trumpets. And on the seventh day, to actually walk around seven times. And then at the blaring of the trumpets, all the Israelites were to shout, and the walls would fall down. And, of course, after that, the battle and the mayhem commenced. They invaded the city and were told to utterly destroy it. Men, women, livestock, everything gone. How big do we think Jericho was at the time? Are we talking thousands of people here, or hundreds, or a couple of dozen? How big is Jericho? How big was it then?
Well, the tell of Jericho today, you can actually, if you wanted to walk around it, and you actually probably could, it would probably take about 20 minutes to walk around it. So when Joshua, later on in the story, surrounds it and walks around it how many times?
So it's not that long a walk.
No, probably a couple hours around, you know, circling it the number of times that the scripture tells us. But number of people, probably, I would say, of course, during the time of siege, the people who lived outside ancient cities most likely sought refuge inside the fortified part of the site itself. So my guess would be maybe 1,000 people, 1,500 people. Who would have lived here, and of course they taunted the Israelites, Joshua and the boys, and finally the walls did come tumbling down. One difficulty that I have is that when Catherine Kenyon suggests that there was a time period of 150 years when no one lived in Jericho, because she dates these walls to about 1550, this is one leading reason why she said and concluded that Joshua could not have entered the land in about 1400, because she concludes no one was living here. The city was destroyed certainly in the 16th century, but for 150 years no one lived here, so there was essentially no Jericho to conquer. So this is one leading reason, and she was the impetus, if you will, for suggesting that the date of the conquest should be 200 years later in the 13th century.
Well, there is disagreement about the whole timing of the Exodus, isn't there? I mean, there's even scholars are saying there's an early date and a late date, or it could have been someplace in between. It's hard to even nail that down too precisely. So if you're within 100 years, it seems to be a pretty good guess.
But the difficulty that most conservative archaeologists have is that the historicity of the Bible is taking a back seat to a misinformed and misinterpreted archaeological find. Catherine Kenyon was a very competent archaeologist. However, her weakness, as I understand, was in dating pottery. And a lot of times archaeologists will use pottery to date a site, or a date specifically a particular level. So what she did not appreciate or conclude correctly was the presence of certain types of pottery, specifically a type of pottery that was ceramic in nature. It's called Cypriot pottery, and certainly Bryant Wood, for instance, is a conservative archaeologist who is an expert in pottery, and it seems as if this type of pottery does show up in other places around Israel in about that 15th century time period. So, unfortunately, this pottery was misdated, and then, therefore, these conclusions were the result of this. And, again, what do you throw out, the archaeology science or the Bible? And
now, when you say conservative archaeologist, you're referring to someone who takes the Bible as the literal historic fact of the area and applies that first.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, gotcha. Now, if we fast forward, now her work was done in the mid to late 1950s. Now we're in the 1980s, 1990s, and more work is being done by Italians. And that group has been accused of going there specifically to disprove any connection with the Israelites' conquering of the city. What do we know about those more recent digs?
Well, indeed, they have been taking place. The Italian team actually sort of revisited what was found prior, not only by Kenyon, but even the records of John Garstang, who dug there in the 1930s. He was also a British archaeologist who had no problem with a 15th-century conquest, taking biblical chronology as it appears in the Bible. These Italians actually, were indeed going to Jericho with a particular agenda, and what they discovered, they even documented that there were mud brick walls that were destroyed. In fact, there's even a picture of even Brian Wood, who about at the same time in the late 90s actually went and sort of resurveyed the findings and all the records himself. And there, lo and behold, are mud brick walls, but the Italians, unfortunately, don't attribute them to the 15th century or relating to Joshua in any way.
Now, we know that in Jesus' time, his ministry took place there a couple of occasions. He passed through it coming and going. You mentioned it's 20 miles to Jerusalem. That must in those days, must have been a pathway through the mountains. How long does it take to travel from Jericho to Jerusalem on foot?
Well, going in that direction, it's uphill, about almost 3,000 feet. So what we're talking about in terms of walking up, I would think it would have taken all day long if someone was able to do it in that time period. It's uphill, it's through the wilderness of Judah. Today, people can actually walk down the Wadi Kelt, it's called, and the Roman road actually goes from where Herod established his Jericho, which is not in the same place as Old Testament Jericho, incidentally.
Oh, okay.
It's a different place. It's actually a little further west and a little further south, but that was probably the place where the Mark 10 story, for instance, takes place, where a guy named Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, the blind guy, mm-hmm. although the other Gospels tell us that there was at least two blind men, but that story probably took place at the New Testament area of Jericho. But indeed, a very difficult climb nonetheless to Jerusalem. It would have been the most common route taken by pilgrims attending the Passover or the Sukkot festival, whatever festival they would have been going to Jerusalem for. But
I presume people drive that route today. Is there a paved road between the two?
Well, there's a new modern road that goes from mm-hmm. Jericho to Jerusalem. It takes maybe uphill and a bus, of course, probably about 25 minutes or so. Coming down, it only takes maybe 15, because it's basically a coast all the way down from, really, the halfway point is the Good Samaritan Inn. It's a traditional spot where the parable.
Good Samaritan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Place. But getting back to Jericho, certainly New Testament Jericho was a prominent place as well. Like I said earlier in the conversation, Herod the Great had one of his palaces there, and no doubt was one who visited this place during the winter months.
Of course, the area was under Roman control in those days, and in reading for this, I noted where Herod apparently leased that area from Cleopatra before her suicide, and she and Mark Antony committed suicide. Octavian, who I think became Augustus, my Roman history is, because his name changed as he became the Caesar, the emperor. But Herod, of course, kind of a favored pet of the Roman administration there, at least for a while. And so he leased the land, built his palace, and in an area, then that's where we would expect Jesus to have passed and done his healings and his traveling.
Yeah, some people say there's a contradiction in the Gospels when the text tells us when Jesus was coming into Jericho, and another Gospel says when he was leaving Jericho. Well, no doubt the two locations for Jericho, both the Old and New Testament site, even though the Old Testament site was not being used at this point of in time, although there's a spring there still called Elisha's Spring.
So it was probably in ruins during Jesus' time then.
Indeed, but probably one gospel writer had that Old Testament site in mind when he wrote when Jesus was coming into the city, and maybe another gospel writer had the New Testament site in mind. So there's no contradiction at all there. It's just two locations for the same for a city that's used the same name for centuries.
Mm. And goes way back in history, however far you might agree that is, at least for several millennia. There have been people living in Jericho. And it's interesting to note, though, that by the time of Joshua and the conquest by the Israelites, it was a rather small place. Would it, if it had walls, does that constitute a fortified city? I mean, could we have figured they had substantial military of their own to oppose the Israelites?
Oh, I think so. Indeed, these walls were impressive. The revetment wall was, and as you can see today on the southern end, you can see that these walls must have been at least 15 feet high, and then on top of that were these mud brick walls. Of course, we don't know specifically how high these were, but the combination of these two walls, one on top of the other, must have been a pretty formidable experience for the Israelites walking down below and circling the city for such a long time.
Well, I would imagine with all of their numbers that they almost encircled the city entirely if they were going around. I mean, the beginning meets the end. And that must have been pretty intimidating to the folks in Jericho. Now, these days, it's under the Palestinian Authority. And
it is.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that they would limit access, but are there limits to the archaeology that can continue there, can go on?
Well, you can actually see, I was just there again in June, and there was actually a couple new squares being opened, so someone's actually excavating there or surveying some areas that had previously been excavated. But what's interesting is the political ramifications of this being in a Palestinian-controlled area. Of course, as you mentioned, the Italians came there in 1990s and indeed found these mud brick walls and revisited some of what was found and documented before, but they came with an agenda of sort of disproving the Bibles. And when we hear of these types of things, you know, the evidence of the site itself and even another conversation about what was found that guys like Brian Wood are trying to make, the world does not seem interested at all in sort of resurfacing this discussion. I think the primary reason is they want to be intentional in disassociating the site with really anything that deals with historic Jewish context.
And you know, so, that might have the ironic effect of protecting it. Because we know where there has been destruction in Jerusalem, in particular, of anything that has to do with the Christian story. Maybe some of that can be avoided in Jericho just by disassociating itself for a time until things settle down a little bit. David, you've been looking at some of these materials, too. What do you think? Interesting place, huh?
Interesting, very interesting place. And I did think that the other interesting part about it is the part that John just talked about. And the thing that I read in Kenyon's article, the article about Kenyon too, is that it brings up the same thing we were talking about last week and maybe even forever, but there seems to be archaeologists out there whose purpose is to disprove, who are trying to find holes in the story, who are trying to find information that will say absolutely cast in concrete, yeah, this is, you know, the Bible is not true and here's the proof. I also picked up there's a sister city of Calipatria in California.
Yeah, I did
notice that. Jericho's sister city, and I don't know too much more about the relationship. It's down in Southern California. It's east of San Diego in that down extreme southeastern corner of California down near Arizona, also home to the Calipatria State Prison.
The wife. I've never understood sister cityhood, what that means for either place, other than chambers of commerce getting together and trading information or something. But
yeah.
Yeah. They also noted that there's a city in Norway that claims to be a sister city of Jericho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Calipatria is, 7,800 people. Okay. You know, a little tiny town down there. It's the home of the world's tallest flagpole.
Well, it's good to know.
So there you go.
Yeah. John? There we go. John, it's been fascinating. I don't know what to make of it. Hopefully, there'll be more that we can learn at some point if we can get in there seriously and do some honest to goodness objective archaeological research. Wouldn't that be a joy, though, to go there in safety and just be able to open it up and take a look? Is there a large modern city there now? How big is Jericho these days?
Yeah, I think it's about 20,000 or so. It's pretty much Muslim Palestinians nowadays, ever since the days of Arafat when he lived there prior to moving to Ramallah. But it's still a nice city to go to. It's
still kind of the Palm Springs of the area there?
It really is. I'm actually staying there in my May trip coming up. There's a nice little more youth hostel, lower-end hotel that's still very nice, but I'm actually looking forward to it. You can actually take a cable car, right? You can get it almost near the site of ancient Jericho, but it goes all the way up to the cliff area of the Wilderness of Judah, and you can see the Monastery of Temptation there, and on top is the traditional place where Jesus was tempted. Of course, traditional in the sense that there's a Byzantine church built up there. I was there once back in the 80s, but it's interesting to get that vantage point, and I'm looking forward to visiting Jericho again and seeing that once more.
We should mention that John conducts biblical Israel tours, and his website can inform you completely about those tours and when they're scheduled. He still have some openings. I know there's one coming up in November. Still got some spots available there?
Yeah, we have some spots available. It's basically on seats with on the airlines. We just have to make the request at this point, but there's still a room for people joining.
But you normally travel, I guess the different groups are different sizes, but 30 people thereabouts?
30 or 40. My November trip only has maybe 12 or 13 or 14. I'm not sure the number now, but okay. It would really be ideal for people to join a smaller group and maximize our sightseeing together.
That could be the trip of a lifetime. If you'd like to check that out, you can go over to their website, biblicalisraeltours.com. Biblicalisraeltours is all one word, .com. You can link to them from our site, brokenroadradio.com, and learn about Pastor Delancey and his work in Israel and maybe sign up for another tour. He's also got a book that's available on the website that I think you would find fascinating. So, John, thanks so much. We're privileged to talk with John just about every Tuesday morning on Archaeological Matters, and we'll look forward to next week. John, did you celebrate Labor Day in good shape here today? Did you get some time off, did you?
Well, actually, we had a challenge here at the church. We had some storms last week. We had some backwater, if you will, dirty water come up through our drain pipes in the basement. So right now our basement is totally not smelling very nice. We have a team of professionals cleaning it. So I spent my Labor Day pretty much here at church in
laboring.
Laboring.
Well,
yes.
See, it was appropriately spent then.
So
unpleasant.
Very unpleasant. Yes. So
you got
it's like driving past a sewage plant. It's all you need to do is walk down the steps of our church, and that's what it smells like. We dumped out hundreds of gallons of dirty water before these professionals were able to come, and now they're cleaning up now. But
might be a good time for service in the park next Sunday, huh?
Yeah, maybe.
Bring your picnic baskets, and yeah, I think so. John Delancey, a pastor and our resident expert in archaeology from Glenshaw, Pennsylvania. John, have a great week and get that mess cleaned up, okay?
All right. Thanks, guys.
Music on a Broken Road Radio Tuesday morning from After the Chase.